Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Those are some of the stories we're following this morning.
So when you turn on Larry King on CNN and see Vladimir Putin responding to reports in the headlines that same day, the Prime Minister of Russia, you know, somebody's hit a chord somewhere. Listen to this.
As regards the questions posed by Mr. Gates in these diplomatic cables, that has to do with the evident desire to apply pressure to the allies in tackling specific matters. Such matters arise in big numbers. They say, yes, you need to apply pressure to Russia. They are not democratic. You should do this and that because they are not democratic. We've heard that thousands of times. We've started to dismiss such allegations. Yet they've been using it as a tool of the foreign policy of U.S., and I think it's erroneous approach to dealing with the Russian Federation.
Vladimir Putin there wanting more respect in responding to the WikiLeaks cables, which show a picture of Russia, at least through the eyes of some diplomatic cables, that's not terribly flattering and puts Vladimir Putin on the defensive. Joining us now is Andrew Larin, reporter for our partner, The New York Times, part of the team that's been going through this enormous database. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Great. First of all, what is this portrait of Vladimir Putin that is beginning to emerge? And we've actually got some extra headlines that Putin didn't respond to last time, which emerged this morning.
Sure. Well, it certainly portrays a Russia that is far less than a robust democracy. It also portrays Putin as someone who's, someone in one cable, it's referred to as a tandemocracy, where he certainly has a great influence on what Medvedev is doing.
The president.
Exactly.
Right. And there's also questions about his work ethic, about, how he behaves, at the office or working from home.
That's right. When he left the presidency, you see him becoming isolated and distant. In part, that's occurring at the same time that the economy is receding, and he has less ability to dole out the kind of favors that have made him kind of a Teflon president, as the work with my colleague Chris Chivers and I shows today.
Now, is this a portrait of a man who is losing power, is becoming weaker, or someone who's just, maybe in a kind of semi-retirement, maybe a little bit like Berlusconi over in Italy, which the cables also show, there seems to be some sort of bond between Putin and Berlusconi.
Right. Well, there's definitely bonds shown between Putin and Berlusconi, but it also shows a Putin who definitely has a large degree of power inside Russia. Particularly when you look at oil deals in Russia, there are questions raised about his large controlling interests that are rumored to be in place. There are questions about corruption that goes on within the petroleum industry inside Russia and other business deals as well.
Now, let's talk a little bit about these corruption allegations. And there's more indication this morning that these extend beyond the borders of Russia and relationships with Belarus and maybe some other countries as well. But before we get to that, does this database show an American or a diplomatic community that basically refers to Russia as corrupt or operates from the assumption that the very mechanisms of government in Russia are intimately involved in corruption, and that's the only way of dealing with Moscow? Because those are two very different conditions.
Sure. They seem to portray a picture that's more of the latter of what you're describing.
So this database, how does this database uniquely tell that story and change, the kind of job that you have as an investigator over there at The New York Times?
Well, it certainly shows a Russia, for instance, that will tolerate a highly corrupt mayor of Moscow who most clearly, according to these cables, has links to organized crime, to just permitting organized crime factions to operate with some impunity.
So you see the U.S. officials, not simply, and there were some references to Putin liking small animals and the cuddly animals as well, so there's some gossipy stuff in here, but you legitimately see American officials attempting to decode and understand the corrupt mechanisms of the Russian government to deal with them, for good or ill.
Sure. Well, I mean, keep in mind, that's what our diplomats in part do. They are our eyes and ears on what's going on in a particular nation around the world.
Now, U.S. officials in some of these cables and others have described Belarus and Chechnya as virtual mafia states. Now, you know, is that some sort of suggestion box idea coming from a diplomat, or is that actionable information?
Probably more of the former, where they're just describing the way things work in those particular nations.
And so there's nothing particularly surprising there, although it's maybe a little shocking to see down in print.
Right. Keep in mind, what can be frustrating reading these cables is that sometimes they will have broad brush statements like that, but there are occasions where, while they make those statements, they don't exactly back it up with
right.
hard evidence where you see, oh, and here are the checks that go into this bank account, or here's, you know, we've spoken with five inside sources who support this. It may be very thinly sourced and thinly documented, but they do have this is the picture that they portray.
So as an investigator, and again, we're down to about a minute here, do you have to look up the resume of the diplomat making the statement and figure out if maybe they're in trouble, that they're trying to impress somebody, that they need a job, that they're a political appointee, to evaluate the veracity of what they're saying here?
Well, you also see the diplomats themselves doing it. But don't forget, you know, we have correspondents around the world who have that kind of a background, and certainly Chris Chivers, who'd been based in Moscow, was able to bring a lot of that to the table in our reporting of this story.
Oh, that's really interesting. You know, Bill Keller on our program this week, your boss, or one of them, said this is a one-time window. It's not going to happen again. I suspect the job of investigative reporters has changed forever because of WikiLeaks. Would you agree with that?
It always seems to keep changing.
And you're not going to get to say anything against your boss, I guess, huh?
He's a great boss.
Andy Laren, reporter for our partner, The New York Times, down there in the cubby holes of The New York Times, going through the WikiLeaks database. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.